With a boom, boom, boom in my heart, you're always a part of me, always inside of me, you're never apart. With a boom, boom, boom in my heart, you're always a part of me, always beside of me, you never can part.
Exterior, Hyde Park Favelas, evening. Floating through the narrow alleys, ramshackle shanty buildings and tight warrens of the favelas as rain batters down through a fading rainbow. We settle down upon a clearing where a police saucer has landed. Squadutants unload crates of contraband booze, food and gadgets, supervised by Italian bombshell Mama Antonia Lavarini, 50, and her burly offspring Vito, 25, and Angelo, 22. A battered neon sign, long since broken, denotes the World's End Cafe. Through the slit windows of the cafe sits a dishevelled and thinner version of Farouk Fazal, the reporter from the Hale Vanity assassination. His big whiskers, eye bags and long hair betray a far less polished version of the network presenter. Interior. World's End Cafe, evening. The only customer, Fazal, sucks on a cigarette and sips an espresso. He reads a battered paperback copy of The Catcher in the Rye while the saucer takes off outside. His fingers drum on a battered briefcase atop the table surface. Antonia returns to the cafe and he watches her sashaying behind the counter with a contented sway. She smiles at him. Interior, storeroom of cafe, evening. Fazal and Antonia copulate like awkward teenagers in front of a huge Italian tricolour. Angelo opens the door and spots them, shutting it promptly in disgust. They straighten out and Fazal produces the briefcase. Antonia coos and smiles. He looks at his watch.
This will take off another 10 years, baby.
Where do you get all this great stuff, Faz?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Don't be like that. I'm just curious.
I never reveal my sources, Bella Signora.
Blah, blah. Open it, will you? I'm jonesing for some.
He obliges. Antonio coos at the contents. Interior, storeroom of cafe, evening. Antonia's eyes brighten in a more youthful glow as she injects a clear liquid into her neck. Her skin immediately tightens and she grows younger by the second.
Go easy on it. This is tricky gear to get hold of.
How long before it wears off?
3 months, but don't quote me on that.
I won't quote you on anything, sausage.
She finishes injecting, now more like 30 years old.
So what can I do for you, apart from the obvious?
Antonia winks at him. Fazal looks to the ceiling.
I heard you had a projector.
She laughs, a little nervously. Fazal glances at his watch again.
Just humor me, would you?
Tech is very illegal in the favelas, Faz.
So are nanocosmetics, dear. They don't like commoners using the good gear. No offense.
I could lose my privileges.
Come on. You lose, I lose.
She sniffs and draws back the Italian flag. A crackly, hyperreal graphic appears. Life-size, upsize, normal. Fazal glances at his watch.
Time for the news, methinks.
Why are you doing this to yourself?
Shush now.
Fazal places a finger over normal and scrolls through some options to live news.
Live and hyperreal from London. This is the evening news bulletin with Farouk Fazal.
The clean, reporter version of Fazal appears in front of the scruffy version. Fazal sucks his teeth as Antonia shakes her head.
Non capisco. Perché?
A fashion parade of Vogue models streams past the fake Fazal and the two viewers. Muller follows on the catwalk to the rapture of fans.
Oh, super sweetness, I gorge on your gorgeousness, you gorgeous primates. Look at me, everybody's...
sweetly apes go uber banana for Moolah Couture Moderna, yeah? Look at him.
Welcome to the World Center of Volk Culture in Battersea, where today sees the winter collection from Sebastian Muller unveiled to his adoring public.
Everything halts. Vazal claws the air to sweep Muller out of his path and then circles his alter ego, gritting his teeth. A loud, guttural animal growl, scrambling footsteps, and Bronte's desperate scream. Bang! Interior, Dacha, day. Bronte is in a big pine bed. Rays of lemon sunlight strafe in from a giant bay window. A framed embroidery is on the wall opposite in Cyrillic Russian text. Dom, Mili Dom. Home, sweet home. Misha, the bear of a man from the forest, sits chuffing on a cornpipe, observing her slumber, a peaceful relief. Anya, 60, a neat and tidy babushka, enters carrying a tray of soup. Bronte stirs.
Was I?
Interior, Bronte's flat bedroom, day. She sits up.
Dreaming.
And sniffs the air. Cigarette smoke. Deconstructed man sits in an easy chair, smoking away like a steam engine, watching her.
You've been quite the little mystery, Miss Bronte.
Another figure emerges from the shadows. Moran.
Aye, that she has. The little lamb.
Bronte looks through the fourth wall, confusion reigning over her creased forehead. Interior, Dacha, morning. Bronte glances at her weird-looking host, grins with spaced-out blissful ignorance, and passes out. Interior, Dacha, morning. A bowl of borscht sits on a tray beside her. Anya strokes Bronte's shaven head in delicate passes. Misha perches in the bay window, weary of the visitor. Bronte stirs. Interior, Bronte's flat bedroom, day. No one home.
Bronte, here is your incoming mail. You have 3,824 messages. Message one.
Simpkin appears.
Where the piss did you get to last night? Lexi, you there? You're coming into work today, Lexi?
He vanishes and is replaced with another Simpkin.
Lexi, I'm really not being funny, but they're about to go in on your bum with no lubrication, love. Friendly warning, you need to respond to your messages. We had coppers turning up this morning and everything. I'll just state for the record that whatever it was, it had nothing to do with me.
He vanishes. A beat. He reappears.
Lexi.
Interior, bathroom, day. Bronte foams at the mouth in a ridiculous attempt to extract herself from the apartment as she pulls herself into a vent above the toilet. She's filled to the gills with an overwhelming surge of adrenaline. Deconstructed man picks his teeth in the doorway while Moran clutches an empty hypodermic, grinning at the results.
I think we've got its attention, don't you, Grayson?
Indubitably, boss.
Bag it and tag it, then. Chop, chop, sonny.
Deconstructed man shrugs and grabs Bronte by her ankles as she grunts and struggles to get through the space. With a sudden, violent yank, he brings her crashing down to the tiles, her jaw cracking against the sink.
Easy, son. Don't damage the evidence so we process it. Schoolboy shit.
Affirmative, boss.
Bag and tag. Come on. A bit more urgency, sunshine.
Okay already. How come I get to do all the donkey work? Shit.
Don't shit me, laddo.
Interior. Dacha. Day. Bronte sniffs the borscht and glances at her hosts. She chuckles, not for a second believing that this is reality.
Oh, Kovoga.
Misha sneers.
What's laughing, boy's problem?
Anya puts a hand on her shoulder. Bronte casually shrugs away.
He does not trust Westerners, and he has good reason.
My miserable old fucknut.
Misha growls.
Did Joey Simpkin put you up to this? I've been stitched up, haven't I? I knew that ginger bitch in the bar was too good to be true. Fake tits, fake everything.
She looks under the bed.
Where is that silly little ball bag? Simpkin? You here? Oi! I'm probably late for work.
Upon uprighting herself, she recoils in pain, overcome by a rapid headache.
Eat your food and rest, sweetie. There will be time for explanation later.
Misha sniffs and mutters his first English words.
Take as much time as you like. Make yourself at home. We have endless time and resources.
Sarcasm is lowest form of wit, Misha.
A low rumble of distant explosions from outside. Bronte clutches her head as the headache subsides.
You two really are the Blitzkrieg, aren't you? Amazing coding. So real. And I usually know the difference.
She feels the texture of the blankets.
Yeah, just excellent engineering. Really. Compliments, Bart.
Bronte claps. Anya and Misha frown at her odd behaviour.
Oh, this headache, though.
Misha shakes his head, knocks the ash from his pipe out of the window and gazes out with a 1,000-yard stare. He sees a plume of smoke rising with the sun in the far distance. Anya tucks Bronte in and offers her a spoonful of borscht. She smiles, going along with the ride.
Are we done? Can we switch this off now? I'm really sure I must be late for work.
Eat.
Exterior, West London, day. Deathly quiet on the surface. Devastation and ruins everywhere. Hard light beams up from cracks in the ground. The Adler cruises along the perfect road surface, silent and light as a ghost. No traffic lights, no other cars, a private highway. Interior, Adler, day. Hardyman sleeps as John Ford's The Searchers plays out in a crudely rendered three dimensions, the landscape of the desert and John Wayne on horseback dissolving into the plush exterior of the limousine. Manny Capra sits serene, lord of all he surveys outside. He switches his view to the sleeping Hardyman and shakes his head with a resigned sigh.
Naughty boy. After everything.
Exterior, Chelsea Dome, day. The Adler pulls over and Hardyman stumbles out like a drunk. He motions to speak to Manny Capra, but the rear passenger door slams shut.
How very rudely doodly.
The car zooms off with a sudden urgency. Hardyman eyes his home, hands on hips. He whistles like a cowboy summoning his horse. The Harley rides itself and parks in front of the entrance.
No sleep till Brooklyn. Let's party.
He hops on the chopper. Alpha, the audio assistant, pipes up.
Valentina Di Firenze and Sebastian Mueller have a small gathering in their Battersea garage, sir. Platinum access only.
Good. No pun life. Me likes ye. On your way, chariot.
He snaps on his aviators and takes off at full pelt. Interior, Adler, day. Manny Capra strokes the cheek of the rendered version of Hardyman as he climbs on the bike seconds earlier.
Good. Upon life. Me likes ye. On your way, chariot.
I'm going to miss you, you silly little tart.
As the bike rides off, the projection stops. Manny Capra slumps back in his seat. Exterior, Hampstead Homestead, day. The Adler pulls up into the grounds. Interior, boardroom, day. Manny Capra sits himself down by the fire as Guinness serves him brandy. He contemplates a chess game on an ornate table in progress.
Will that be everything, sir?
Philibert Jameson.
Very good, sir.
Manny Capra observes the Andy Warhol soup can above the fireplace.
Do you think I should get rid of it?
Shove it up your ass, for all I care.
Interior, default space. The room dissolves to black. The only light is emitted by Manny Capra himself, the chess table, and Philibert Jameson, a 90-year-old version of Manny Capra, standing over him, where Guinness was seconds ago.
What are you? The Grim
Rather
Reaper?
Apt. Have you moved the...
Sit.
Jameson sits opposite and contemplates the game.
Move the pieces. Cheating?
Give over.
Manny Capra moves his rook and punches his clock.
How's the tumour? Or tumours?
You should know. You arranged them.
Yours is a very complex algorithm, Philly.
Don't call me that.
A double helix graphic dances in front of them.
Based on our genome pattern, if allowed to run its course in the early 21st century. And you refused chemotherapy. Stubborn old bastard.
Jameson counters with his queen and punches
his clock.
Why
do you torture me with extinct diseases and such poisonous narcissistic drivel? Why don't you just end me? You could
Manny
put...
Capra sweeps off Jameson's queen and punches his clock.
Where's the fun in that? Who would humour my planet-sized ego?
Anyone in my place. Anyone.
I like your impression of Marley's ghost.
Guinness drags his chains along an invisible stone floor in character as Jacob Marley.
I wear the chain I forged in life, replied the ghost. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it.
Guinness
Should
vanishes.
I forever be the plaything of a 250-year-old man-child?
Manny Capra emits a tombstone grin and slaps his forehead with the back of his hand in a woe-is-me expression. In retribution, Jameson sweeps off Manny Capra's knight and punches clock. Manny Capra nods. Surprised at Jameson's counterattack, he glances over to observe another version of himself several feet away, bearded and in casual gear, playing chess with a 5-year-old boy. Jameson, child.
Too many games have been played, Manny. Surely you must be bored by now.
What? The alter egos vanish and Manny Capra returns to the game.
Boredom is the enemy, I'll concede. I've yearned for a spot of betrayal. A challenge, interior or exterior. Now.
He removes Jameson's bishop and sits in checkmate. Jameson knocks his own king over, pissed off.
Now it looks like it is finally happening. How do you like them apples?
Jameson leans back and snaps his fingers. Guinness returns in butler form and hands Jameson his drink on a silver platter. Jameson drains and returns it immediately.
Well, whoop-de-fucking-do for you.
I thought you'd be happy for me, bitter child.
Swish me off. Please.
Nope.
Jameson gurns disappointment and struggles to his feet, pulling on a flat cap
this
and scarf.
This is torment. I'm in hell.
How can you be tormented? You are an algorithm. Silly old man.
Really think I'm not feeling this? Don't break your own dream, Manny.
Good point.
Manny Capra settles back in his chair, tired.
Well, go if you're going.
The chessboard has returned to starting positions. Jameson glances down and grunts before sitting back down. He shoves a pawn along one space and punches clock.
Your move, bright boy.
Just be glad you've got me instead of Tembronte. I know what it's like when they send the nasty boys in and they fuck you all day and all night.
Crash! Thud! Interior. Hallway. Day. Screams and crashing emanate from inside the bedroom as Misha and Anya wait at the door. Crash! Misha gurns in displeasure. Interior. Dacha. Bedroom. Day. The room is trashed, Goose feathers from torn bedding, broken furniture and smashed porcelain litter the place. Bronte lies on the bed, exhausted and distraught. Small cuts on her body and face. It appears that reality has bitten her hard. Anya enters with a tray of food. Misha eyes her warily.
What do I have to do to get out of here?
Interior, white room. The space is devoid of furniture apart from a large bed upon which Bronte lies, hair longer and altogether stronger than the earlier scene.
What do I have to do to get out of here?
From out of nowhere, Maria appears. Blonde hair, short and spiky, clad in only her underwear. She straddles Bronte, kissing her fully on the lips. Bronte stops her.
Everything about this is wrong, Maria.
Maria grips Bronte's throat.
You need to enjoy this, Alexandra. Otherwise, you know what will happen.
Bronte pushes her off.
Why? Is it for their benefit? Or yours?
Behave. I'm warning you.
I'm a tax-paying citizen of London. I've done nothing wrong. I demand to be released now.
Maria snarls and flies at Bronte, pinning her to the bed. Bronte struggles and grunts, but her roommate is much the stronger. Exterior, balcony, day. Deconstructed man stuffs his face with a hot dog as a hyper-real version of the white room takes place in front of him.
Now that's not very sporting, is it?
He hits a red button. Maria screams in agony, collapsing off the bed. Ketchup squirts down deconstructed man's front.
Damn it!
Interior, white room. Maria falls off the side, foaming at the mouth and fitting in silent torment. Bronte's face appears over the edge.
I'm sorry, Maria. I'm so sorry.
Exterior, balcony, day. Deconstructed man belches and hits the button again. Bored, he kills the reconnaissance and the New York Knicks basketball team replace Bronte and Maria. Interior, white room. Bronte sits with Maria at the bottom of the bed.
Did you hear me? I'm sorry.
Maria coughs and splutters back to animation. Bronte tries to comfort her, but she shrugs away violently.
Touch me again, and I'll fucking snap you.
Interior, lab, day. Three-dimensional graphics of algorithms and strands of helixes dance around a po-faced female clinician. She chews a toothpick as she moves data around with her hands. The hyperreal display of Bronte and Maria playing in front of her.
Serotonin spike 11% on contact with arousal subject, yielding some interesting results. Recommend this process to be accelerated, monitoring peptide responses in the subject. We may need to source another stimulant, as the seizure inducement has a high probability of deleting the other female if use is continued at this rate. I'm talking to you, Officer Grayson Suarez. This is not a game. These are live subjects.
Yada yada.
Behind her, for a split second, a rogue line of 00110101010110111 machine code flashes in red and joins the other streams of code, lost in the numbers instantaneously. Interior. Humvee, night. Briscoe, Kutz, and Steve Cruz, a bespectacled geek of a Texan, observe the same flashing numbers from a mini hyperreal projector as the vehicle bounces along across the frozen plain as a blizzard rages.
We're in. Virus initiated and activated. The quarterback is toast.
Briscoe beams, clapping Cruz on the shoulder. Kutz half smiles.
We haven't done anything yet.
Interior, Pollard's office, day. Pollard watches Maria's tired, shattered eyes as she climbs back on the bed, joining the stricken Bronte. She grips her seat and sucks her teeth.
No more. No more.
Exterior, balcony, day. Deconstructed man belches again and lights a smoke. Moran appears and sniffs in disgust at the apartment.
Boss, I've just gone off duty. Come on.
Moran grunts, looking over the edge of the balcony.
Hello, boss.
Have sent coordinates. Meet me in 15.
Boss, I'm off the clock.
Oh, this isn't work. Well, not that work. Besides, you're never off the friggin' clock, son.
Can't we discuss it here?
Moran looks around him, smiles, and shakes his head.
If I told you to take a curly shit on the floor and then eat it with a knife and fork, you'd do it, son, so get moving.
Yes, boss.
Moran vanishes. Deconstructed man salutes thin air. Exterior, Chelsea Embankment, evening. At either side of the Thames, high opulence mixes with ruins as hard light bounces between dome structures rising from the bomb damage, from the spectacularly restored Battersea Power Station to a strip of restored buildings, opaque hemispheres rising from their rooftops like a cluster of fish eggs. The Dodge streams past and we pick up its trail. It pulls over by a retro neon Vegas-style frontage, the Amazonia. Interior, Dodge. Evening. Deconstructed man cranes his neck, checking out the bull-necked orange 8-feet-tall bouncers guarding the door.
What fresh dog shit is this, I ask?
Interior, Amazonia foyer. Evening. Deconstructed man approaches, grinning, hands up.
Yo, boys, girls, whatever it is. I'm cool. See? Cool. Huh?
A bouncer, Geraldine, stands over him, blocking any progress.
You're supposed to show your voucher at the door, sir. Gold access exclusively.
Gold, really?
Geraldine picks him up by the jacket with one hand. He dangles in midair, legs kicking.
Now you wait just a minute here, coconut balls! I didn't say nothing! Hey!
The other bouncers join Geraldine, viewing him with curiosity.
Hey! You weird fuckbreed! Put me down!
Is this the individual with the personalized transit carriage that runs on fossil fuel?
I reckon so.
Retrospective 20th century stylings.
But no pass, no entry.
Interior, Amazonia Restaurant, evening. Fine dining, 23rd century style. Geraldine accompanies deconstructed man to a booth where Hardyman and Moran smoke, drink, and argue.
Boss, I want to complain about these steroid goons.
Moran holds a finger up to stop him and taps the tablecloth on which is scrawled the name Kutz.
Boss!
Moran puts a finger to his lips. Deconstructed man notices Hardyman sitting opposite.
Son, I don't know if you're waiting for a tip or something, but we're expecting some pretty important company. So it's time to vamoose.
Moran stares up at deconstructed man.
What?
The stare continues.
Oh, this is Mr. Hardyman, right. Them some pretty fine monkey glands you're taking, sir. I had you down for the bus boy. Must get the number of your surgeon, though.
Sit down and shut up, Grayson.
Sure, boss.
Moran taps the table. Deconstructed man sits as Moran turns back to Hardyman.
You know how many strings I had to pull to get us this secure location, Hardy? Don't waste my fucking time.
Hardyman blows smoke.
This is potentially difficult, but I hardly think this represents as serious a threat as you make it out to be, Apsley. Not if we take the right, measures.
You didn't know Dr. Kutz like I did, Sal, with the greatest of respect. This woman's more than just a doctor. She's a certifiable fucking witch in binary figures. You might control the world on the surface. She controls the underworld. The quantum politic.
And why isn't she here? Right now! Calling the shots! We've got all the bombs, Apsley!
Think about it, Saul.
I know. I just don't want him to think this is all my idea.
And what difference will that make if this goes tits up, old man?
Hardyman looks every bit the sulking teenager, chewing his nails. Deconstructed man watches the verbal tennis and slumps back in his chair as the entrees arrive. Interior, Amazonia Restaurant, later. He sits and smokes as a waiter clears the dishes and more food arrives.
The Congress was a good thing until they got greedy.
I agree, but you could have handled it better.
Why am I here again?
Close the gob, lad. We'll get to you.
Interior, Amazonia Restaurant, later. The desserts arrive. Interior Amazonia restaurant. Later. Coffee arrives. Deconstructed man sucks on a beer.
Well, maybe we should ask our American friend's opinion on...
Deconstructed man jumps in his seat, startled by the direct address. He puts down his own body.
Oh, and it seems like I really am here in person. Which is a very fortunate thing, gentlemen.
Well, I concur, Saul. The boy's a professional. He should know these things.
Hardiman smiles and offers Deconstructed Man a smoke from his gold case. The American accepts.
All I know is how to blow a hole at someone.
Grayson, you're being far too modest. You are the famous Deconstructed Man, agent provocateur par excellence. Best in the business.
Aye, a bit of a smart ass, though.
You don't need to play down his credentials, Apsley. I'd like a second opinion. I think a question of this magnitude serves one, from a specialist's perspective.
Deconstructed man straightens his collar and takes a deep breath.
Our investigation surrounding the kidnappings last fall did reveal somewhat of a threat to your organization, sir.
Moran pats him on the shoulder. He's not good at being over-friendly.
Don't be coy, lad. It's our organization. Ours.
You say that these people used to be employees of our company?
That's right, Grayson. But the nature of their business involves certain checks and balances.
How so, may I ask?
Well, Grayson, the Doctors' Congress wanted to have control of the application, or public use of their research.
And that's a no-no, right?
Right. We own the intellectual property rights. Ever since the entertainment and medical sectors converged, we've been market leaders, bankrolling even their most frivolous research, making it a reality. They got very upset when we denied them the freedom to reveal their quantum alchemy to the world. Imagine the problems if every little maggot had the ability to go on forever. Ridiculous! A social engineering disaster. And for all their smart science, they can't see it. Within a few hundred years, population would spike again, and we'd all end up living on Mars. And, you know how that went last time, darlings.
Fucking disastroid went, aye.
So the Doctors' Congress went into competition. Misguided, from their point of view. No one is irreplaceable. The arrogance of it.
Moran and Deconstructed Man look up and down at Hardiman's 18-year-old dandy figure and at each other.
Ooh. Quite a wee fucking purse that was, Grayson. Boom, boom, bang, bang. We nailed some fucking foreskins to the wall back then. Guinea pigs for their own research. Island of fucking Dr. Moreau shit. Served them fucking right too.
We got the cleaned up version of that on the news, I remember. I just started on undercover when it happened. Every fucking doctor in the tri-state area, from vets to shrinks, was shitting breeze blocks, yeah. Okay, so these guys jumped town. Then what?
The Congress managed to save half of their membership. The other half either went back to us after some severe sanctions had been put on them, or they were retired.
With the foreskin bang bang thing, yeah? And you don't know where the rest have gone?
Correct. There aren't many places left where our brand of communication haven't reached. East Africa, Siberia, parts of North America that aren't contaminated. Amazonia. Antarctica.
An uncomfortable silence.
So? I'm guessing I wasn't brought here for a history lesson.
Moran claps a hand on his shoulder.
Mr. Hardiman and I have followed your career keenly, Grayson. You could say we're both fans, and since you joined us in London, well...
Well, it's just got better and better.
Aye, so it has. You're one-man army. But here's the thing. We have a bigger problem. And it won't resolve itself of its own accord. A most discreet resolution is required.
Deconstructed man notices Hardiman sweating and twitching, looking about the place.
Business end of things.
Don't worry, old man. No one can hear us here. We're safe. Just some friends talking. What's your assessment, Grayson?
The situation's not critical. Not yet, anyway. Keep your thumbs up your asses too long, though. You'll have a problem soon enough. Your infrastructure isn't perfect. Perfect don't exist. Your problem lies with the management, then.
Aye. Management.
Management. Management. Management. Management. Management. Yeah, management.
Hardiman emits a twitchy grin.
I'm sensing you need a very specific task completed in order to help you with the overarching issue.
Sharp boy. Glad you think that way, Grayson.
Moran leans forward, taking an uncomfortable amount of deconstructed man's space.
Mr. Hardiman and I have a very special job for you, if you're interested.
Interior, Dodge, Knight. Deconstructed man drives, lighting a cigarette off the butt of another. He's not so cocky now. A still, hyperreal rendition of Manny Capra's head rotates above the dashboard. As if suddenly aware that he might be getting watched, deconstructed man swipes away the graphic. A shiver goes up his spine and he lights up a smoke. Interior, storeroom of cafe, Knight. Fazal is drunk, clutching a bottle of Sambuca and still in the Hail Vanity assassination report. Fake Fazal stands frozen by the stricken celebrity as he is suspended in animation, falling backwards.
Lies, lies, lies.
He kicks at fake Fazal, hard lighting dispersing off his foot. The door clicks and the light goes on.
That's enough, Faz. I mean it.
He grins and sits on a crate. The simulation ends. Antonia draws the flag back over the projector grid.
If I'd have known...
Fazal hugs Antonia. He touches her back.
You got your money's worth.
Watch your mouth, Fazal.
He presses a finger to his lips.
Angelo.
Angelo enters. He gives Fazal a manila envelope.
What?
You've earned my loyalty, Faz. Don't waste it.
He opens it. Insert. Handwritten note. Meet me at Albert's, 9 p.m. DS.
From the girlfriend?
Don't be ridiculous.
Angelo tosses him a motorcycle helmet. He catches it. Exterior. Favela's alleyways. Night. Angelo rides a scrambler bike through the tight dirt tracks that separate the shanties. Faz hanging on for dear life on the pillion.
Oh, Allah is great!
Exterior. Checkpoint. Night. Squadjutants attend the vast doors as the bike approaches. Angelo lifts his visor and winks at the officers as they exit the park. Exterior. Albert Hall. Grand entrance. Night. Angelo alights the bike, pulling off his helmet, followed by the awkward and incongruous Fazal in his wake. Punters stare at him as they pass up the red carpet. Door staff part like the Red Sea as Angelo approaches. High fives and salutes all round. Fazal shuffles along like a tramp in his wake.
Right, I'll be waiting here. Remember, we're on a curfew.
You're not coming with?
What's the matter? Brave reporter lost his mojo. Don't worry. They said they were your friends.
I don't have any friends.
What does Mama see in you?
Fazal makes his way through.
About 25 years so far.
Interior. VIP area corridor. Night. Fazal looks even more diminutive as he scuttles along. Outrageous Vok glitterati party and fornicate openly, drinking, dancing, fucking along the way. He reaches out with his hand and hard light disintegrates among them. He stops at a curious tableau of posing catsuits. He can't help but laugh.
Ha!
Muller and Di Firenza are in leather feline onesies, black and white respectively. Muller is furious at the interloper.
How dare you distrottington mine fanbase, you bearded swinehund!
Distrottington verisimilitude's sheer arsy cheek! Door staff remove his testicles suggestion box, Sebastian.
Fazal prods Muller with a finger.
Oh shit, you're actually here. I do beg your pardon, sir, miss.
Commander assault and battery!
Muller jumps like a scalded cat, which is what he is.
yowl! Negative machismo! Valentina, you must yodel security peeps to eject this sphincter schwein! Ich demand beating und expulsion!
Yolei, divest his balls, Prontenstein!
Fazal moves away sharply and through into the crowded dance floor. Interior. Albert Hall Super Club dance floor. Night. Throbbing music. The floor is packed with a combination of hyperreal and real clubbers gyrating. Fazal slaloms through, looking for a familiar face anywhere. A powerful spotlight is upon him and he squints to find its source. The royal box occupied by Scanlan and Featherblade. Interior, staircase, night. Fazal scales the steps up to the royal box, huffing and puffing. Featherblade waits for him at the door.
The man himself on a brave adventure across town. Roving rapper dog, freaky style, eh?
Does anyone speak English these days?
Interior, royal box, night. Scanlan plays a guitar solo on a vintage Les Paul. The instrument vanishes as the throng below cheers and Featherblade takes over at the decks. Fazal looks at his watch.
Fazraz, welcome in. Long time no
while. I hope this isn't a waste of my time.
Oh yes, precious time, likey. You've got time more than anything. Time to pump that Italian pooch Mama Laverini, yeah?
I'll tell her you said that.
Come with me, Stud Muffin.
Scanlan presses on the wall and gives way to a hidden compartment.
Tis an ancient royal ball tool from the olden days, don't you know?
And I remain unimpressed.
Interior. Dingy corridor. Night. Dimly lit, narrow and dank. Scanlan is almost bent double as Fazal follows him. At the end is a small door. They pass through. Interior, palm house, day. Bright sunshine dapples the tropical foliage. Pollard sits at an ornate table drinking a china cup of Lady Grey. Fury engulfs Fazal's face when he sees her. Scanlan places a big hand on his chest as he motions to leave.
Just you hear her out, Fazraz. She's on our side. Believe me.
I don't believe you.
You want to get back in the game or not?
Fazal grunts like a terrier and joins Pollard. Scanlan makes to leave.
Where are you going?
Look, I've got a set to finish. You're in the good hands of the Babylon now.
He shuts the door behind him. An uncomfortable silence. Pollard admires the palm house.
I try to avoid simulations. They distort the natural order of things. But as they go, this is pretty good.
Why should I listen to a word from you?
Hello, Farouk.
You destroyed me. We loved each other.
Clearly you've had too much time to think about it.
Fazal lights up a cheroot and blows the smoke at her. She flinches.
Firstly, I had no choice. It was exile or death for Farouk Fazal and his nosy nose. You know that. Secondly, we ended a long time before you started sticking your beak into the affairs of Manny Capra. The important detail pertaining to point one.
I'm a journalist. That's what I do.
You were a journalist.
Fazal blows more smoke at her.
Look, I haven't come here for a pissing party, Faz. I have an offer for you.
I heard they took you away from the favelas. Made you Apsley Moran's gopher. How was the old psycho then?
I'm here on behalf of the Doctor's Congress.
Fazal stops in his tracks, the smile slipping off his face like manure from a shovel.
Knew that would get your attention.
You have a family, Susan. These words could get you all killed.
Thanks for your concern, but I had to do something. Someone had to.
Fazal nods.
I'm going to do something, which is why I wanted to see you.
More silence from Fazal.
What I'm about to tell you should be documented and made public upon the removal of the company Manny Capra, Apsley Moran, and all their acolytes from the governance of London. At which point I suspect I will be long dead. For your info, my family is currently en route to a safe location. So it's all on me, Cherub.
Shit. Game on, eh?
Yes, Farouk. It really is happening at last. And you do the truth better than anyone in this world full of illusions and cold machines. So stop behaving like the wronged man and listen up. You can consider yourself relevant again.
Interior, Dhaka bedroom, night. Bronte pitches forward, drooling and feral, chains to the bed snapping rigid. She snarls at Anya.
Let me out of here!
Anya looks to Misha.
No drugs. That's what we agreed.
Not for her, for me.
Very funny.
Interior, Dacha, morning. Anya tries to feed Bronte, who spits out food like a baby. Interior, living room, night. Anya knits. Misha reads in front of a roaring fire. Muffled banshee screams from above. Interior, Dacha, morning. Bronte lies limp and semi-conscious, pupils dilated, breathing rapid. Anya attempts to feed her with a spoon. Exterior, yard, morning. Misha chops firewood. A scream and crash from inside. He shakes his head. Vasily, the Cossack from the forest, rides into the estate on a horse. He notices the racket coming from indoors. Misha shrugs. Interior, hallway, day. The heavy door is bolted shut. Interior, Dacha bedroom, day. Bronte stirs and wakes, as if coming out of a fever dream. A mug of hot tea and some black bread and steaming borscht sit on the bedside table. She is bleary but calm. She eyes the food and starts to feed herself. Interior, Dacha bedroom, day. Bronte finishes, belching. She eyes the bookcase sitting opposite her bed and the chains around her wrists.
Anya? Misha? Can you come up here a second, please?
A beat. Nothing.
I won't bite. Promise.
Interior, living room, night. Bronte sits in pyjamas reading Boris Pasternak's Dr. Zhivago. She finishes the book and puts it down.
What a thing.
Anya and Misha smile at each other, each hold a book up.
Solzhenitsyn.
Dostoevsky.
Zhivago was the first book I ever read.
Your enhanced Western brain should not struggle, Anglichenka. We will get you onto the original Russian text next. Start with the classics.
Misha.
It's true. Her neural pathways are supercharged. The synaptic development of a 3-year-old. Quite a waste, really, given all the shit she's been fed over the company networks.
Misha.
Too soon?
Too soon.
Okay.
Bronte chooses Solzhenitsyn from Misha.
Tell me more, Judge Misha.
You heard that. Uncle Misha, it is.
You've done it now.
A banging on the front door. Exterior, front porch, night. A tall Frenchman in modern uniform, Jean Montgomery, and a Russian commissar tap the snow off their boots. The commissar projects a rotating image of Bronte from his hands. Montgomery hands some papers back to Anya.
So, what is big Frenchman like you doing all the way out here? Zut alors.
Montgomery half smiles.
It is vital to the war effort that we apprehend this person soon, Professor Korsakova.
They nod.
She does not look much like a terrorist, does she? She does not even look Russian. German, maybe? American?
That information is classified, I'm afraid.
Come, you can tell me. I have no one to gossip to but my husband. And he is as deaf as he is floppy.
Too much information. Interior, cellar, night. Bronte lies flat inside a firewood chest. Misha shuts the lid and piles machine tools on top. Exterior, front porch, night. Anya winks at Montgomery. Montgomery and the commissar glance at each other. They head back to their saucer, perplexed at the randy granny. Anya watches them as the object takes off with a drone. Exterior, snowy clearing, day. Bronte and Misha have shotguns. Misha tracks a quail flying past and fires, downing it.
Dinner for one.
Bronte fires, taking down a partridge. Misha claps her on the shoulder.
Dinner for two. Well done, kid. Let's get Anya's now.
Bronte looks at the gun, then at the bird. Exterior, forest trail, day. Vasily watches them through binoculars eating an apple.
What are you doing? Taking her out into the open like that, old man.
Anya stands behind him, holding a submachine gun, watching everything.
The girl has a right to breathe some free air before your...
Mother, no.
She shakes her head.
You're more like me than I would like to admit sometimes.
Exterior, snowy clearing, day. Bronte holds up her dinner and looks back to Misha, who lights his pipe. She drinks up the experience. Interior, lab, day. A sterile, windowless space. Clinician Briscoe wipes a film of sweat from his brow and delves into the chest cavity of a cadaver lying on a gurney. Hyperreal graphics detailing blood type, double helixes, and personal data dance along between human and corpse.
Postmortem summation. Clarence Augustus de Costa, Mediterranean male, 31 years.
Briscoe's words become graphics as he speaks, joining the other data in the dance.
A hungry bear met this fellow. He was buried under the permafrost for about 3 months now, and it has taken a full day in this heat for him to thaw properly.
Briscoe slides the gurney into a hatch and pulls it out again, clean.
And Dr. Kutz will perform the next autopsy on the escapee. Whether you like it or not, Liebken.
Oh, really?
Kutz wears a lab coat and clutches a cup of tea.
Any news on Specimen Alpha?
Any chance for a cup for me?
It's your own, dickhead.
Still sore, eh?
We broke up 80 years ago, Liebchen. I think I got over you. This is about professionalism.
Well, it was your idea to come to Siberia.
The last place on Earth we could hide. Must we do this again?
No. I guess not.
A beat. Kutz sits up on the gurney.
Montgomery and co. are still combing the area, but they're scaling it down.
I want it found. It could destroy everything if it fell into the wrong hands.
Katya, we haven't got the resources, and we open ourselves up to all kinds of more tangible risks by persevering with the search. She's either under 3 feet of ice, or she's been adopted by a bear and joined the circus. Really, who gives a monkeys out there?
Thanks for clearing that up for me.
It's my guess the blizzard got her after the fire. She was naked, and she couldn't have lasted long in the tundra.
Guessing doesn't cut it. And you know that. We're scientists. What if some Cossack picked it up? Or a militia?
Then they would try to sell her, whichever side they were on. And when they realize that she's worthless, then she becomes dog food. Must we go through this again? Look, compassion died a long time ago out there, darling. Take a glance in the mirror.
Kutz sucks her teeth.
Next time you want a guinea pig, you fucking go to London and get it yourself.
Briscoe grins and slips over to her.
What are you doing?
You must get bored out there.
She pushes him away. Briscoe gets on his knees and parts her legs. Kutz sniffs and looks down at him, almost with pity, as he works on seducing her.
Oh, go on then. For all times, whatever.
Briscoe pulls off her panties and admires her pudenda.
Perfect nanobiological design.
All your own work.
Yes.
But not sexy, Christian.
Briscoe lunges forward into her. Kutz snaps her legs shut and pushes him over with her foot.
Well, you're no fun.
Back to work, genius.
Exterior, landing pad, night. Title: 15th Plenary Congress of Doctors, Nimsky Oblast, Siberian Free State. A savage polar wind whips the platform as a saucer powers down. Montgomery, Cruz, Vasily, Kutz and Briscoe wait as the guests arrive, shivering as they alight the aircraft. Steph Kershaw is a gaunt, short American of 55. Frank Nkono is a refined Somali academic of 61. He wraps a thick scarf around his face, startled by the temperature.
Next stop, London.
I'll take this place any day of the week.
Welcome, comrades. Let's get you warm.
Kutz grips Montgomery's hand. Briscoe notices his chagrin. Vasily eyes them all warily as they pass him and enter the bunker. Interior, black space. A chess king wobbles and falls. Jameson massages his temple as Manny Capra bites his fingernails.
Good game, though.
Jameson grunts and grabs his hat and coat off a stand. Guinness helps him.
Not staying for another?
There is a queued guest asking for your attention, sir.
Jameson sneers and walks off, dissolving into the inky black.
Guess not.
Mr. Old, a 3-year-old ginger boy in a tailored suit, sits opposite Manny Capra. He peeks over the table and down at the kid, who has very adult mannerisms.
Peekaboo.
I don't like to be kept waiting.
I don't like to be addressed by some ridiculous avatar. But we can't all be winners.
You expect me to trust you?
Why not?
Huh. This concerns what I could offer you and what you could provide for me in return. Good, old-fashioned, uncomplicated greed.
Name your price.
I assure you, your competitor is much more resourceful than even you would imagine. That is why my services do not come cheaply. I want land, at least 25,000 square kilometers in one tract. Somewhere warm, with autonomy from any future interference from any part of your organization. Both your network and mine are recording this exchange, so our contract is binding. Any dalliances or tricks, and I go public.
Tough little nugget, aren't you?
There's a problem within your organization. Epsley Moran and Sol Hardiman.
The action pauses. In steps another Manny Capra. He checks out the chessboard and studies Mr. Old, noticing a bead of sweat on his forehead.
Huh.
Exterior, Hampstead Homestead, morning. McBride waits with the Adler. Exterior, tree sniper position, morning. Deconstructed man shifts uncomfortably. He eyes the target area via his rifle sight.
Boss? Boss?
Is it done? It had better had be.
How much longer do you think it'll be? I'm freaking starving to death out here.
Wind your neck in, you little prick, or I'll ship you back to that radioactive hell you call home.
No need to get tetchy.
Keep the channel clear, Grayson.
Deconstructed man shakes his head before noticing something. Insert. Rifle sight. Manny Capra, leaving the Hampstead homestead, running a hand through his hair.
Come to Papa.
He pulls the trigger. Exterior, Hampstead homestead, morning. A bang. Manny Capra pauses. He opens a palm to reveal a bullet, still smoking. Exterior, tree sniper position, morning. Deconstructed man is struck cold as Manny Capra looks right down his sight and winks. He grabs his automatic and lets rip. Exterior, Hampstead homestead, morning. Bullets fall to the ground like acorns shaken off a tree. Exterior, tree sniper position, morning. Deconstructed man is in a panic. He scrambles down the branches to his waiting dodge.
Gunshot reported. Confirm kill. Grayson? Grayson?
Fuck all this for a big clock!
Exterior, Forest Lane, morning. He climbs into the Dodge and the wheels squeal as it takes off between the trees and into the morning mist. Exterior, Hampstead Homestead, morning. Manny Capra leans against the Adler. Guinness attends.
Have Messrs. Hardiman and Moran attend after my morning drive, would you, Alec?
Certainly, sir.
Interior, Dodge, morning. Deconstructed man is driving like a maniac through the hell mess of what used to be Highgate. The V8 cylinder engine roars at full pelt.
Don't think I didn't plan for this eventuality, you insane Irish fuck. I know I was following orders, but that was beyond stupid, man. By the time you get this message, I'll be off this fucking rock, and you'll be dead. Probably. Anyways, send this the minute I leave this country.
Deconstructed man lights the smoke and peers in his rear view.
Bad idea all this, Grayson. From the get-go.
Exterior, West London Road, morning. The engine cuts and the car slows.
What? Get the fuck! No, no!
He grabs his rifle and a magazine of ammo. As the car rolls to a halt, he jumps out and makes a run for it. Exterior, cemetery, morning. Deconstructed man vaults over some iron railings as several saucer drones approach overhead.
You gotta be shitting me, man!
He pulls a revolver and takes a few vain pot shots at his pursuers, slaloming through the graves. Exterior, Victorian mausoleums, morning. Coming to a clearing and out of breath, he realizes he is cornered. One of the saucers comes down to eye level. He ponders for a second, then puts the revolver under his chin.
I'm not having anyone sticking things up my ass, not in this life!
A taser jumps out of the saucer and stuns him before he can react. He moans and crawls towards a large gravestone, atop of which is a bust of Karl Marx. He looks up at the founding father of communism before passing out. Exterior, Chelsea Embankment, later. Hardiman shuffles out, all of his cool and youthful arrogance gone.
Moran, come in. We need to talk, Moran.
He twitches and paces back and forth.
Manny, it was his idea. He threatened me. I was jealous, but I was a little bitch, I know. But you were right about the treatments. All these Vogue people, they had my head turned like owl fashion. But you still need me, Manny. Remember what I've done for our company in over 7 decades of service. Fuck service, with partnership, yeah!
The Harley cruises up to him, purring like nothing was wrong. Hardiman gulps and climbs on.
Remember, Manny, just you remember.
The Harley zooms off double quick and he recoils, grabbing the handlebars. He cries in fear.
Wah!
Exterior, Hampstead Homestead, day. The Harley is parked in the drive. Hardiman stands in the porch, waiting, twitching. Guinness answers the door.
Need a hard piss, sir?
Hardiman shuffles inside past the butler, mumbling and twitching.
Something wrong with your coating, old fella? Mind our whopping great tooth there, huh?
Interior, boardroom, day. Hardiman drums his fingers against the table, alone in the room, and it concertinas in and out like a lung. Jean Krupa, legendary swing drummer, appears on his kit and starts to play a lick. Hardiman is irritated, but holds his water.
Manny?
Just.
You there? Manny Capra!
He screams and leaps over to the drummer, kicking over the kit.
Will you just hit it and quit it? Will you, huh? Boom! You tit!
Clapping. Slow clapping. Slower. Hardiman adopts a supercilious grin and turns.
Manny!
Ooh!
Moran looks like he's been dragged through a hedge backwards. His fist connects with Hardiman's nose with a satisfying crack. Hardiman hits the deck like an accident-prone toddler, his nose pissing claret.
You broke my nose! You feeding tart!
Manny! Manny Kemper, please! Whatever this idiot says is untrue! It was all his idea! Well, you know I can be temperamental. Oh.
Moran clutches a pistol, which he raises to Hardiman's face.
I mean, we can all find you the combination. We're talented people who just got itchy feet. And
bang! Black. The gunshot reverberates, as do the voices.
Well then, birthday boy.
Am I dead?
You'll wish you were.
Manny! Come on now, old boy.
Wish you were here.
Interior, early 19th century dungeon, night. Moonlight fades up to reveal the squalid interior, this time with Hardiman quivering in the shadows, ball and chain attached to his ankle.
Wish you were here.
Manny!
Hot piss rains down on Hardiman from above. He shields his face and looks up. A Rottweiler turns its leg up over an iron grate. A jackboot kicks the dog's backside.
This is just...
A smile crawls across his face.
Uber fabulous! You old trout, you. I knew you had something extra planned. You hear me, Manny? Cause you do. Naturally.
Happy birthday, Saul. Always the foil. The Joker. 100 years young today.
Now, Manny, let me point out before we go any further. I was selfish and unprofessional, but it was a one-off. Let's discuss this before you do anything permanent.
A jangle of keys and the oak cell door swings open. Two dirty Napoleonic guards are silhouetted in the doorway. One of them is Apsley Moran.
You again?
The Gallic Moran emits a toothy smile.
Bon anniversaire.
Quoi?
Oof! Moran cracks Hardiman across the jaw with the butt of his musket. They pick Hardiman up by his armpits and drag him out of the cell. Interior, castle keep, night. A cold stone set of steps leading up to some grand doors. The guards drag Hardiman up as he comes to. The muted tones of a quadrille francais, along with chapter and revelry, scan from the other side of the wall.
Holy gods, thank you! A society event. It will be merciful to you, my friends. Thank you, Manny.
Manny Capra's chuckle in thin air. They reach the top and enter. Interior, masquerade ball, night. A spectacular ball with a full orchestra, coquettes and bouffants sporting fops. All of Hardiman's Vok friends are there. They part like the Red Sea in disgust.
Oh, ye gods!
You! Valentina! He aromases of aught come!
Sebastian! Valentina! I'm in costume! It's my birthday party! Woohoo! Ridington horseplay fashion friends!
Putain!
Moran shoes him in the ribs and he collapses in a heap on the dance floor. They straighten out, spit, and walk away. The dancers and throng stop and circle him. Even the orchestra abandons their positions. A collection of coquettes giggle at him. One makes pig snorting noises.
Porte de guitare de merde!
A senior coquette flaps her away.
Leave the poor old thing alone.
Hale Vanity, in resplendent purple female guise, approaches Hardiman. She strokes his face and he drinks up the tenderness.
My greatest creation. My genius. This is what they lose. I am so sorry about what they did to you, Joe. I tried to stop them.
She presses a finger to his lips.
I apologize for all these vacuous whores and cotton pimps. They have no real finesse.
But you do look like double dog shit.
Fella, I have to say, what happened?
Joel, sometimes I regret killing you off, you know? In a moment like this, you would have had great value to me.
I'm sorry, too. Believe me. Oh, I almost forgot. My beau for the evening would like to speak with you, monsieur.
Manny? What is this game?
Once again, you were the inspiration, Saul.
Listen, I built your fucking company with my ideas, Manny Capra. You'd be nothing without me. Do you realize that?
Manny Capra places his ringed hand gently over Hardiman's mouth. His characteristic suit and blonde raven hair have been replaced by an outfit that is crimson from toe to bouffant. Sexy demon, beau of the ball.
That's a uber svelte and slick look.
You always liked the sound of your own voice far too much. Typical marketing man, I guess. You know, I always wondered when the real Saul Hardiman would show his colours. To be frank, I'm surprised it took you so long to betray me. It's not your fault, I know. It's in your nature, your old-fashioned programming.
He grins down at Hardiman and caresses his worn cheek. Hardiman is rooted on his knees, wobbling.
Saul Hardiman wasn't born to be number two to anyone, was he? Even loyalty and friendship mean nothing in comparison to that simple fact. It has been killing you all these years. Hasn't it, you poor chap? I could have forced your hand eons ago, Hardy. But you're right. I needed your energy, your ideas. Sorry about that.
Hardiman hugs Manny Capra's legs.
Ideas which are now, alas, getting a little stale. That's a much better reason for this than any cheap betrayal. Don't cry, old boy. You've had a cracking innings. A wonderful legacy to take into your retirement.
Hardiman struggles to see his own reflection in Manny Capra's hellish red eyes.
If you think you can do without Manny Capra, then please, don't let me get in your way. But don't expect to take it all with you, old fellow. Now, I guess, all that is left is for you to see what I see, eh? Let's take a look.
At the man behind the iron mask.
Manny Capra disappears. Hardiman spins round, his soundless voice crying for mercy. He spots the eyes of the throng, every person in the ballroom staring at him. Glassy, waxy, dead faces. Then laughing, alternately masculine and feminine. Demonic coming from behind him. The coquettes and courtesans join in, creating a chorus. Then the voc aristos, the musicians, even the page boys.
Hardy.
Interior, boardroom, day. Manny Capra is in his usual place at the head of the table, his suit a neat 60s mod look, eyes smiling as before. He holds a Renaissance vanity mirror up to Hardiman so he can see his reflection. The old codger, staring back at him, looks at death's door, with the exception of his sparkling new magenta eyes.
Happy birthday, Saul Hardiman.
Manny Capra nods, smiles, and vanishes. Then everything wipes. In quick sequence. Black. Interior. Boardroom. Day. Deconstructed man brushes dirt and grass off his leather jacket as he perches next to the fire. The room has stabilized. He espies a warped mirror above the hearth, the work of Salvador Dali. Guinness delivers a can of Coke and a burger on a silver platter.
Obi-Wan! Awesome Jedi skills!
Thank you, sir.
He tucks into the burger.
You know, I really wasn't expecting this. A bullet would have been the best I could have hoped for, but all this Silver Service British Butler Obi-Wan shit? Well, I don't know why you're spoiling me. I tried to off the Lord of the Manor. Huh.
He chugs down the Coke and belches like a toad.
Excuse me.
Manny Capra enters through the door. Deconstructed Man puts down his lunch and stands.
Please, finish your meal, Grayson.
Deconstructed Man slowly sits back down, wary of his employer.
Sir, I'm a little confused. I had orders to decorate your porch with your brains this morning. Now I'm getting an invite to the top table?
Manny Capra smiles.
You knew it was wrong. You followed their orders, even though it was a dangerous and rather idiotic conspiracy. I respect that kind of gumption, Grayson.
Well, yeah, but...
Manny Capra sits on the wing of Deconstructed Man's armchair, a little too close for the American's comfort.
Look, how about I make you an offer? Do you like offers, Grayson?
Deconstructed Man finishes his burger and wipes his mouth.
Yes, sir. I like offers.
That a boy.
Interior. Dodge. Day. Deconstructed Man enjoys the ride. He flips his aviators on and lights a smoke, unable to quite believe his luck.
Use your dominant eye to side with Sasha. Come on.
Exterior. Forest Trail. Day. Bronte clutches a shotgun, like it is going to explode in her hands.
I just can't do this, Misha. Is there any need to kill the poor thing?
It would have eaten you alive.
I'm sorry, I don't care.
Misha prods a digit into Bronte's chest.
You want to stay warm? You want to eat? Or die cold and hungry, like an English vegetarian? It's not a funny matter.
The same bear that attacked Bronte is scraping at some tree bark across a clearing. Bronte raises her weapon again. A beat. Her heart isn't in it.
Out here, we get to know our food before we eat it, you pussy.
Bronte looks like she wants to protest. But then, bang! The bear slumps against the tree, twitching, blood oozing from its head. Misha spins round to see Vasily on one knee in a shooting position. Bronte grabs Misha close.
Stop being a posse.
Misha sniffs the air, a boom in the distance, and the ground shakes. Vasily has gone.
War's getting closer. Come on, help me get Big Bastard's carcass on the sled. You'll be on skinning and guarding detail when we get back.
Bronte pulls a face.
Tough girl, eh?
Who was that man?
Come on. Let's go before we lose the light.
Exterior. Dacha. Sundown. The orange and lemon sunset almost make the destruction beautiful. The Orthodox chapel next to the dacha burns. Anya watches the building as it collapses under the intense heat. Misha and Bronte pull the sled up, and Misha puts an arm around her as she gently weeps.
One ship. One of the damn shells.
Be thankful he didn't hit the dacha, darling.
Thankful.
She thumps his chest.
That was your supply of grain. How will we eat?
We'll go back west for a little while.
Anya sniffs in derision.
Vasily will help.
Don't, Misha. Just don't.
You're the one who wanted this.
Bronte frowns as they both glance back at her.
What does all this mean? Who's Vasily?
It means war has arrived.
Anya elbows Misha.
Means it is time for you to go home, Alexandra Maximov.
Home? This is home.
Interior. White room. Bronte stirs on a four-poster bed beneath the sheets. She wakes, not quite knowing where she is, before nearly jumping out of her skin when discovering the person sharing the bed. Maria places a finger on Bronte's lips. She looks haggard, beaten.
Don't make them angry. They hate to be disappointed.
Who hates to be disappointed?
Maria kisses Bronte, who responds for a second before pushing her away.
Bogus, Maria, I'm so sorry for you.
You remembered my name, sweetie. Progress pleases them.
Bronte climbs out of bed. It is impossible to determine the dimensions of the room. A door appears. She tries the handle. Maria shakes her head.
You tried that before. I'm hoping it will all come back to you, or they will take it out on me again.
Bronte sits on the bed.
I'm sorry. Who are you?
Maria rolls her eyes just as the door crashes down.
No, you won't do that to me again. I said no.
Gas-masked squadjutants enter the room, and Maria sets about them with kicks and punches. A female approaches Bronte, staring through the visor.
Now!
Gas streams through the chamber. Maria wobbles on her feet before collapsing. Bronte looks puzzled before fainting herself. They pull the inanimate women into clear bags that immediately fill with gel. Pollard removes her mask and sniffs the air.
Clear. Like we were never here. I fucking well hope so, anyway.
A squadjutant joins her.
Ready for the second stage, Gov?
Pollard nods. Interior, tube station platform. Multicoloured LEDs line a locomotive engine and ancient tube carriages along the platform of the long defunct station. Scanlan and Fazal join Pollard as the shrink-wrapped bodies are inspected aboard the train by Kutz. Fazal scribbles into a moleskin notebook.
That's my Faz.
You should get going.
So should you.
A group of engineers, supervised by Featherblade, are scratching their heads and tapping the locomotive with wrenches.
I have every faith in them. We'll be underway soon.
Pollard looks about herself. Fazal doesn't even look up from his writing.
You need to get back up there before you're missed, Susan.
Kutz returns to the platform and eyes the engineers with derision. She clutches a pack of meds.
Why are we not underway?
Scanlan rolls his eyes.
This is experimental tech. Crystal-driven engine, Doctor. We just need a few minutes to jump her up again.
Jump her up? Fucking imbeciles, all of you! And the other girl was not part of the deal.
Your soul died such a very long time ago, didn't it, Katya?
Kutz returns to the train.
That woman.
Fazal grabs her arm.
Susan, go.
Pollard nods. Interior, shower room. Pollard showers. Interior, office pod. Monitors and hyperreal displays everywhere. Maria and Bronte are still in their holding pen. Pollard, back in uniform, watches them, then looks at a framed photo of her with her partner and two children.
Godspeed.
She picks up a coffee and sips. The office door slides open and deconstructed man, sporting a lime green quiff and gold suit, sashays in. Pollard nearly jumps out of her skin.
Grayson!
You look like boiled shit, Susie. You seen a ghost?
Pollard scans him up and down. He crashes on a sofa.
What a night!
You're very early.
I'm very late. No sleep till Brooklyn.
And what's with the funky getup? You had some work done.
Deconstructed man jumps up and kisses Pollard hard on the cheek.
Ain't you gonna congratulate me?
For what?
It's been all over the networks.
Pollard is still nonplussed. He does a little dance.
Ta-da! Meet the new boss. Definitely not the same as the old boss.
No, still don't follow.
Pollard frowns and pulls up a network page. Deconstructed man is featured in full uniform as the new chief constable. Suddenly, her mouth is jammed.
I know. I still can't believe it. And I've just busted this whole town up all night with my new Voke buddies.
Not you too.
Perks of the job. So, tell me.
He leans into Pollard, grinning. His teeth gleam white with animated, smiley faces. His skin is younger and deep brown. His face and body are more chiselled.
How do I look?
Pollard glances at the monitor covering Bronte and Maria. He notices and spins round to watch them.
I thought Apsley took you off this case.
Apsley's not in charge now, is he?
Deconstructed man pokes the air with a finger.
Correct, Susie.
Anyway, forget about that. Who made you chief constable and why wasn't I informed? What happened to Apsley? Is this some kind of stupid prank? Because if it is...
He gets back to his feet.
Humour me a second. I'm still a little wired and giddy from all the excitement, but...
This is all very, very strange.
Come with.
Interior, white room. Bronte sleeps. Maria strokes her hair. Deconstructed man enters with Pollard.
You're acting odd, even for you.
Uh-huh.
Deconstructed man lights a smoke and pulls a pistol.
What are you doing? They have protected status.
He fires at Bronte, hitting only the mattress. Smiling, he spins and aims at Pollard, who already has a gun trained on him.
Well now. Power down simulation, executive order.
The women vanish.
Put it down, cowboy.
Go on, pull that pin. You'll enjoy it. I always do.
He lowers his gun.
Get me out of the way and that makes a pretty good day all round for you, doesn't it just? You might even be able to bring that wife and kids back from Denmark for Christmas. A cozy little apartment in Vesterbro. You really thought we wouldn't notice? Just because we ain't looking doesn't mean we ain't watching.
She trains the gun on his forehead, her stomach turning over.
You fucking lunatic.
Go on then. One kill to save many. Worth it, huh?
Pollard frowns at his weird dancing. She steals herself and pulls the trigger. It clicks.
Chief Constable privileges. Weapon ID locking, baby.
He shoots the ground and she hops.
Now. Why don't you tell me where you hid the two bitches? And I might just leave your family be, cowgirl.
All the colour has drained from Pollard's face. She drops the gun. Interior, tube station platform. Everyone is gathered round the locomotive. It coughs and dies.
Thinking we need to run down the tunnel instead of this eggs creature, Duffris? I'm getting some wobbly karma about this stitch.
Why am I being forced to work with amateurs and villa scum? Fresco, you inept bastard.
Featherblade gets in Kutz's face.
Wanna say that again, grandmother? Yeah, me knows all about you, chemical death cheater.
Yes, whatever. One less grounder when I got you.
Kutz casually pulls out a hunting knife. Featherblade gets out her own. Vazal continues to write.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Ginger.
You really want me to end you, don't you? Why are you here? Waste of space.
Scanlan gets in between them. The locomotive bursts into life, and steam rises out of the stack.
We can do tantrums back at the Batcave. Let's hustle.
Interior, white room. Pollard sits on the bed, trying to hold back tears. The muzzle of deconstructed man's pistol caresses her forehead.
I'd love to stick around and tell you all about my promotion, Susie. You'd find the details most amusing with your proud service record.
Don't call me Susie.
But well, you have been very forthcoming and well.
Please leave my family alone.
Bang! Pollard slumps on impact.
This day just gets better and better.
He waves his arms around, still high. He waggles a finger and a clock cranes out of the ether on a long neck.
All points.
Yes, sir.
Squadjutants, this is your new chief constable speaking. I want an armed response team to meet me in the retired Central Line underground station directly beneath this building. Immediately, please. There will be hostile fire and party games galore. Maybe even a cocktail reception with canapes and caviar and shit. Let's get ready to rumble, rookies.
Interior, tube station platform. The train is slowly moving away from the platform, the lights flickering, smoke and steam filling the station. Deconstructed man with several armed squadjutants run onto the platform and open fire. Featherblade, to the rear of the train, strafes the platform with an assault rifle, decimating the pursuers. Deconstructed man dives onto the tracks and sprints after the train below Featherblade's eye level. His legs power along like pistons, and he gains on the train as the loco struggles to pick up momentum.
I love this new DNA synth!
Interior, tunnel. The train moves into a wider tunnel, and deconstructed man draws level with the back carriage. He spots the prone Bronte in the rear going for broke. The lights flicker on and off in a sustained rhythm, with longer blackouts now.
How do you like me now?
He grabs the edge of the carriage and forces open the door between cars. Interior, train carriage. Scanlan attends the two women. Deconstructed man grins and raises his pistol.
Ask questions later.
Just as he makes to fire, a stiletto heel rips through his cheek, knocking him sideways. Kutz kicks him hard in the balls before removing a few of his shiny new front teeth with her other heel. Deconstructed man grabs her calf and upends her. They share a glance.
Well, hello, you foxy lady.
He grabs his pistol, but she buries a needle into his neck. He goes cross-eyed and she pushes him back through the still open back door. Exterior, tunnel. Deconstructed man falls onto the back, his shoulder snapping on impact. The light from the train strobes the gory, half-dead mess left on the line.
Welcome to the party, pussies.
He notices the needle, giggles, and passes out as the squadutant's torches appear in redundant pursuit. Exterior, forest trail, night. Misha and Bronte ride in the jeep. Exterior, decrepit train station, sunrise. The two wait at the deserted outpost, perched on a bench on the platform.
I've never been on a train before.
You've never done anything before.
Why are you always giving me such a hard time?
Misha sucks his gums.
I don't know why Anya couldn't have taken me. Miserable bastard.
Yeah. Two women travelling alone.
She can look after herself. Sexist prick.
Misha sniffs. A beat.
Why am I going home? Why am I here in the first place?
Not again.
I deserve to know.
You deserve fuck all. Western brat.
A beat.
This ought to make me hate you, isn't it? I'm not falling for it.
Misha gets to his feet. The faint ticker-tacker of a train approaching.
Grab your shit, Anglishenka.
In the distance, a steam train shudders down the tracks towards them. Interior, train carriage, night. Bronte watches the silhouettes of the Siberian wilderness pass by as Misha snores, catching flies. Exterior, Vladivostok, sunrise. The lights of a port city as the sun comes up over the railroad. The Pacific Ocean drawing a veil across the horizon. Interior, train carriage, sunrise. Misha clutches his hunting rifle. Bronte glares at him.
This is for your own good, Sasha.
Oh, you keep telling yourself that.
I'm sorry.
The train pulls into a station, slowing. He bites his lip. Bronte leans back in her seat. Exterior, dockside, morning. Bronte shivers as Misha chuffs on his pipe next to a gangplank to a huge tanker. The MV Phileas Fogg slapping the thickest captain on the back like he's his best buddy. Misha beckons Bronte over. Exterior, container hold, morning. A couple of deckhands open up a container and Bronte peeks inside.
No way.
Misha shakes his head and peeks inside.
I'll fucking die in there. No, a big fat gnat.
The captain glances at his watch.
Look, you have all your vitals here. Heating, a chemical toilet, washing, even a stove and a camp bed.
Bronte emits a bitter laugh.
What about food and water, for Christ's sakes? What am I supposed to live on, fresh air?
See, that pipe is connected to a central water tank on the ship. Desalinated seawater. Tastes like dog piss, but drinkable. freeze-dried food. Good enough for Russian cosmonauts. Good enough for you, you spoilt little Western punk.
Misha cajoles her inside, but she pushes back.
Sorry, Misha, but I don't want to go. I love you. Both of you.
Exterior. Dacha. Sundown. Anya waves at Bronte as the jeep leaves. Tears stream down both their faces. Exterior. Container hold. Morning. Misha takes Bronte's hand and they step inside. Interior. Container. Morning. There is no connection to the outside world. Beanbags, bunk beds, lighting, a larder, etc.
These boats do this all the time, Sasha. You'll be safe. Don't make this any harder for me.
There you go again. Pretending it's all about you.
This is far bigger than you or I, darling.
I love you. I love Anya. I want to go home. Take me home.
Misha tears up, unable to contain himself. He steps out of the container and pulls himself together.
When all this is over, you'll be more than welcome back at the dacha, you know. Flying first class, eh?
What's first class?
Exterior. Container hold. Morning. Bronte pushes herself out and embraces Misha. He gently guides her back inside.
I'm sorry, Alexandre. Forgive us.
Interior. Container. Morning. She frowns as the lights flicker inside her new home.
For what, Misha?
Misha shuts the door.
Misha?
The lights go out.
Misha?
The lights return. The container jolts and she loses her balance, gripping onto a railing.
Misha, don't do this, please!
Interior, container, later. Bronte sits on the beanbag, eating from a tin of beans. She examines a chest full of classic novels and vinyl records before getting to a crate of vodka. She holds up a bottle. The lights go out.
Oh, come on now.
The door clicks and creaks open, revealing a broad figure silhouetted by the hold lights. He sparks up a cigar, revealing himself as Vasily. The lights to the container flicker on again. Bronte grips the bottle tighter.
You're gonna need that, kid.
Vasily steps inside, and the door shuts behind him.
Well, you didn't think Mom and Pops would let you go around the world on your own, did you?
Blackout again.
Damn lights.